This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nally. Our guest this week is Ted McKinney, CEO of the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by Syngenta. Learn more about Syngenta and our support of the U.S. farmer online at syngentaforag.com. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with NASDA's Ted McKinney next. At Syngenta, we talk to U.S. farmers and growers every day to hear their concerns and help them meet their challenges. From research and development to create innovative products to digital solutions to reduce water use and create healthy soil, we work hand in hand with America's men and women who feed and power the world. Our highly skilled teams are the forefront of connecting technology to utilize mobile apps, aerial imagery, and other advances to enable farmers and growers to make smart application and buying decisions for their farms. When our farmers have a successful crop, we all benefit. The Syngenta team is proud to work alongside farmers to help them make the best decisions for their farm. Learn more about Syngenta and our support of the U.S. farmer online at syngentaforag.com. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. Fresh off the NASDA Winter Policy Conference in Washington, CEO Ted McKinney says state ag leaders desperately need Congress to approve a new farm bill. McKinney says the farm economy is challenged more in some states than others.
Now, I would start by saying there's a lot of hurt out there across the board. There's no doubt we heard that. But then it becomes nuanced because some are in greater strife than others. You take soybean states with what's been going on. There's a recent surge here recently that China has met its commitment, so good. That helps some, but you'll hear about that. And you'll hear different things on fruits and vegetables. For those that might have Mexico serving as a pinch point on some of them, but not all of them. If you go to a cattle state, it's much better. So it's very nuanced, but all in all, there is a great deal of concern about the mid and longer term longevity of farmers and ranchers. And no doubt about that.
I am told that in the times that we have experienced farm crisis, it has started in the South and it works its way into the Midwest. I realize that there is a strong delineation between crops and livestock, but do you see a similar situation developing based again on the responses from those that you serve?
Yes, and I think it's still crop specific. We know that the cotton producer is really struggling. At some level, the rice producer, and many of those folks also would have some corn and soybeans. So you mix all that together with whether it's trade issues or other issues. I think there's a general truth to that, more driven by crop and where they're located than just the outright state itself.
In 2026, there is a review of USMCA. How do your members see USMCA, and how do you see the coy/firm response that's coming from the Trump administration?
Well, our members across the board see USMCA, or if you're in Canada and you want to call it CUSMA, or in Mexico and call it TMEC, sees it absolutely and unequivocally critical to U.S. agriculture writ large, period. Secretary Perdue used to say it's the best neighborhood on earth, and he's speaking of food and agriculture, and it is. And you look at the trading partnership that we have to our north with Canada and to our south with Mexico, and you can go to other parts of the world, but if you add those three up, it is critical. It is a great neighborhood, and we've got to keep that strong, and that's why NASDA members, NASDA itself as a voice, so many of our friends in the commodity business, the farmer business, the input business, the equipment business will echo the same, that we've got to make the improvements that need to be made in USMCA. No doubt there are some of those. We think that's very doable. We can say that having talked to a number of people, including Our counterparts north and south of the border, and I'm speaking of the ministers of ag for those larger provinces of Canada, I think we will get there. I'm encouraged, by the way, that all the discussions, all the changes, all the hearings, all the complaints on USMCA have gone through and successfully gone through the USMCA process. And so it says it can work when there are disputes, and I think can work together. The question that a lot of people have, there's no doubt there's recognition that President Trump prefers a bilateral discussion, and I understand that. When you have a bilateral discussion or a talk with one person versus three, you can zero in on their needs, or in this case in trade, their strengths or their weaknesses, and balance that with your own. But I think we've got the structure in place for a trifecta here, a three-way that we need to keep because it can balance other regional efforts going on. Europe as but one, Asia Pacific as another, and the list goes on. So we've just got to keep USMCA strong, and I remain optimistic that that will happen based on the way they're going about the process and the deadlines they're following. They are following the USMCA process, a good thing.
When I talk to farmers, they ask what's driving commodity prices. And my statement for them, it's really more politics than it is fundamentals. And when I think politics, then I think China. What is your perspective on the Chinese and the Chinese attitude? Has it changed?
Well, I hope so. I haven't been in touch with them as much as I did back in the day during USDA service. But I know this. History through and through will tell you that at some level, trade is a good thing. You get products you can't get otherwise. You work through problems more effectively. You're not self-reliant entirely on your own productivity, which unfortunately around the world seems to be a popular theme these days. Harken back to medieval times. There's a reason that Prince X of country Y marries Princess Z of country B. I mean, they kept the peace. There were blendings. They traded. There's a lot of reason to suggest that trade is still valuable. Now, the other thing that I believe, and no, I have not had a discussion with President Xi Jinping, but I would think that he is no doubt sidling up more comfortably to Brazil. Brazil hasn't chosen to show the strength that the U.S. and other countries have. I think that will change in time. But remember, the one thing he probably hates or dislikes more than the U.S. is being a one-source supplier. I think he's got to know that. Plus, look at the ill will that Mr. Putin is getting as a result of his foul play, now 4 years old, into Ukraine. If he wants to be the leader of the free or unfree world, as it goes, you got to play ball at some point. And maybe we've hit that point. I give credit to President Trump. He has those periodic visits. I take him at his word when he says he is a friend of President Xi Jinping, and I hope the reverse is true. So maybe we're just discovering that the fundamentals of working together, even at a basic level, might just be of benefit and having payoff now. At least that's my hope.
I'm interested in your comments toward the efforts of MAHA. No one could disagree with a healthier America, and some are very satisfied with the dietary guidelines that have come out. But then also looking at MAHA, questions of pesticides, questions of seed oils, and certainly a question over a definition of what is an ultra-processed food. Ted, from your perspective and that from NASDA, how do you see the effort of the MAHA movement? What would your crystal ball say is ahead?
Well, there's a lot packed into the Make America Healthy Again movement. So let's parse that, because that's the only way you can successfully address it. And I'll start with the positive. our members, and I would guess society at large, is very pleased that there is a renewed focus on things like fruits and vegetables for kids. I don't know a lot about the makeup of dyes, but if there really is a problem there, okay, they're addressing those. Some of the more fiscally conservative states, and remember, we have a lot of variety across our states. Some are choosing to say, I'm going to limit what people can purchase with SNAP to avoid products that might either in reality or in perception be unhealthy. So some of those things our members would say are a good thing. I would say universally there's a lot of concern, though, about some of the other aspects, and you mentioned the two primary ones, the use of pesticides, and for the life of me, I still don't understand how there is a perception that oil seeds could be bad. I'm still waiting on the answer to that. So it's a difficult issue because there's pieces that you want to support and there's pieces you want to do a big fat watch out on, and that's what we're trying to do all the while working with government. The one thing we're trying to do, at least in part, is remind people just how many products have oil seeds and that they are a healthy and scientifically proven as healthy benefit to those. So we hope that does not rise and become a major issue. Pesticides, we've just got to continue the education. I understand in the abstract, if somebody doesn't know the value and the safety of a pesticide, I can understand how a so-called MAHA mom, I don't like that term, but they're using it themselves, so I'll use it, that MAHA moms prefer, but that's because they do not understand how extremely critical some of these products are, oftentimes with no alternatives. So it becomes a communications game, and I think that's why many, many, many are working on it. For us, the difference is we're seeing much better things out of the federal government. And I think that's because a lot of this has been turned over, if I wanted to be cynical, I'd say unleashed, on the states. And my word, is there a variety of bills out there in various states, all attempting one change or another, some of it good, some of it less so, and we'll just have to work through that during legislative session.
Now there is some traction on the farm bill, and in your policy, staying on this line of MAHA nutrition and agriculture, in this vein, one of the things that your group called for were regional food systems. How could these regional food systems bring a good return on investment toward the health of America and also toward our farmers?
There has been a program that allows for mostly smaller, oftentimes younger, and oftentimes fruit and vegetable or produce farmers to work via contract with schools, with food banks, and maybe with some other entities as well. What our members across the board, not just in produce heavy states, will say is they loved it. It was bringing younger farmers in, producing a product that we do need to have more consumption of, whether it's young people or all ages. And more than anything else, they were able to then have the funding to get a start and then get a contract with a school. They brought certainty to what had otherwise been a highly uncertain business. We would like to bring that back. And it's a simplified food system. It's not the complexity that you might think of with a large farm where commodities can go all over. It's as simple as a single farm having a contract with their nearby school for certain produce, and they know what they need to produce, they know when they need to deliver it, and they know how to deliver it. So food systems can be that simple, and that very example is one that we are promoting very keenly for reinstatement, albeit in a bipartisan way.
In the summer of 25, through budget reconciliation, a number of programs that would have been amended in a farm bill were accomplished through that budget reconciliation process. Ted, what are the things that were left out in the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, or H.R. 1, that you and your members see are critical in approval now?
Well, let's start with the broadest description I've heard that best describes where we're at. the so-called one big beautiful bill did cover about 80% of the financing for various farm bill programs. All 12 titles, about 80% of the funding was achieved through that. But only about 20% of the programs got covered. So this Farm Bill 2.0 is very important because though a lot of the money has been allocated, thanks very much, good, what remains is some clarity on 80% of the programs. So let's go through some of those that we see as very, very important. One is animal disease. We needed some clarity and perhaps some topping off or supplemental funding because right now our friends at the Animal Plant Health Inspection Service, or APHIS, are dealing at ever-present the high-path avian influenza. You know, and our members and your readers and listeners know a lot about that. The threat of New World screwworm, which we just do not want in this country. Oh, my gosh, you talk about trading partners dropping us like a hot potato. We do not want that. And for decades, there's been the foot and mouth disease. And then you can pile on top of that problems we've had more in the past than we do now, PERS and other things. So we really need for them to have more funding so that we can finish out traceability programs. And they have the people that can then help the states do the work. It's a shared thing. But boy, our state folks are exhausted. They are just exhausted with high path avian influenza alone, let alone if another one comes along. So that would be a place for some funding. We are thrilled that there's a modest plus up, not huge, but modest plus up, in basic research. Jeff, if you go around to land-grant universities and on occasion a few of the state agricultural labs where we test for weights and measures, we test for disease presence, all the other things that go to the laboratory, some of our labs are 1950s, 60s vintage. They need to be upgraded for many reasons. This alone is one reason, not to mention some of the basic research that universities will take on that companies just don't do. Companies are more interested in the profit motive, and good for that. So we've got so we're thrilled that there is a modest increase in fundamental research. Specialty crops, and boy, they are prevalent across your listening area. It seems like there's a lot that's coming for the specialty crops in this 2.0 than was in phase one or in the $12 billion of bridge payments, and that is so important. For example, the specialty crop block grants, a program I administered back in the day when I was in Indiana, are very well regarded and very well managed by departments of ag and those who then receive those funds. And so if we're going to make America healthy again with more and better fruits and vegetables, we better be doing well with that one. And then I have to get in my trade promotion. There's a plus up in some market access program, and what the 2.0 Farm Bill calls for is combining two or three programs that I think are even closer than first cousins, might be half brothers and half sisters, and rolls them into one so that when applications are made and compliance reports are delivered, you're not doing two or three different programs, you're doing one. And how important. I'm so thrilled that Food for Peace is scheduled to move to USDA. I think that is where it's belonged all along. I'm thrilled that the State Department and the administration is looking and seemingly supportive of that. So those are just a few of the things that we see at NASDA as being very important.
From the NASDA perspective and your leadership position, what are areas where it's better for states to run and also the other areas where there just has to be continuity across the 50 states?
Sure. And there is no simple, easy answer. We cannot say that the state should have it all. Thanks very much. Feds, we've got it. Nor is it appropriate to say the feds have it all. So let's just talk about where some things have worked well. I think as we look around the world, it has served the U.S. farmer, rancher, and all of ag better for pesticides to be preempted and be kept at the federal level, at U.S. EPA. The reason for that is there have been attempts to by local communities, cities, who I think have the best of intentions, but do not know the difficulties if you had a patchwork quilt of at minimum 50 states, 50 labels, not to mention if every municipality could change that. That has proven valuable. Now, with that comes some flexibilities that states can exercise. A 24C label is something that a State Department of Ag, in most cases, can implement to tailor the need for a special product to deal with a special problem, like a fungi that comes along. And so that works well. Let's go to the other end of the spectrum, the pasteurized milk ordinance, which is just critical to get at dairy safety, was conceived and developed largely by the states and regions of the states. It was not, and still is not today, a federal effort. Well, if the loose decision comes that we're going to just take all of this to the feds, you are giving a program that is highly functional, very well regarded, very well managed, and making a change that is not needed. So it sort of depends on the issue. Now, right now, we know there's a group formed called AFTI, the Americans for Food Ingredient Transparency, that are afraid that there's going to be a 50-state, 50-label on ultra-processed foods or other things, whatever comes through all that legislation. And they're preparing a move for a lot of this to go to FDA. Well, some of that may make just perfect sense, but not in all cases, because almost always the states can make decisions more quickly. Just as effective, but more quickly, because they can tailor it to their state. So we're working closely and positively, I might add, with the federal government. That's the value of being a nonpartisan group. I think NASDA carries a fair amount of respect. So we're working candidly and closely with each of the agencies, FDA, USDA, EPA, sometimes labor, certainly commerce at times. And we're going to work through this, we hope, so that it's not just carte blanche, one bill, everything goes to pick your favorite federal agency. That would be a very, very bad mistake. And the other side is they just do not have the resources in most cases to do all of that. So we've got to keep those parts that are good and appropriate for local control there. And we've got to keep some things that are appropriate and working well at the federal level there.
House Agriculture Committee Chair Glenn G.T. Thompson appears to be, again, stepping out of his lane and taking on ag labor and the need for reform of policies.
Ag labor is easily top five, has been for a while. Since I came here in September of 2021, it has been a premier issue, and we're still deeply involved. Unfortunately, labor is still not ready or seemingly not ready to settle. Now, we're pushing for that. For goodness sake, the border's closed now, so it tells us that we ought to be there, or almost. There's many ways we could do this, but we just have to have the will, and we're pressing to help people understand now is that time. We cannot wait. We're losing business. We're losing opportunity. We're losing farms. We're losing farmers.
Ted McKinney, thank you for your service to agriculture. Thanks to all the members of the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture and what they mean to their states and our industry overall. Thanks for taking time to be with us on this edition of Open Mic. Ted, it's Open Mic, and today you got the last word, friend.
Well, I'll just close with a thank you to my members. You know, Jeff, you know, but not everybody knows that we have 54 members. Four of those are territories the U.S. has. And about 40% right now are Democrat and the rest Republican. And when you come to a NASDA meeting, as we did 2 weeks ago for our policy session, you cannot tell what their political stripes are. And I love that. It's everybody coming together for the sake of that farmer, that rancher, whatever the issue is. And the politics just seem to be left behind. So there's evidence that it can be done that way. And I hope that has added to, you know, our members' credibility as they work in their states, as they work with their congressmen, as they give us permission to go do that on their behalf, to carry a message that's, I think, pretty well thought out and pretty balanced. So we'll see. But I'll say thanks to them. And we had a wonderful winter policy conference with some good amendments. All that stuff's on our website if people want to go to it. Now we just got to go implement it.
Our thanks to Ted McKinney, CEO of the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by Syngenta. Learn more about Syngenta and our support of the U.S. farmer online at syngentaforag.com. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Nellie.